right. I am very excited today to be here with David Yasso. David is the principal and founder of Specified Play Equipment Company and is a 2000 graduate of our program and a 2002 graduate with his Master's of Science in Recreation, Parks, and Tourism. How's it going, David?
Very well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to take the time today to talk with you. We've talked to people, David, all throughout the spectrum in terms of their careers, you know, from recent graduates who just graduated last year, all the way up to our very first, she claims to be the very first student in our major. And I always thought that she was joking. And then we actually looked it up and she really was one of the first class of six that we had. So your claim to fame, and obviously you have other claims to fame that we're going to talk about, but one of your claims to fame is that you were one of the very first master's students. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
All right.
Definitely. I ended up graduating in 2000. And after that, actually went to Texas for a year and worked on my master's in business administration at a small college, Midwestern State University. Was a graduate assistant soccer coach there and only lasted a year in Texas and ended up coming back to Cal Poly to kind of kick off experimental graduate program. And I ended up graduating with a master's in recreation administration from Cal Poly in 2002.
Very cool. Well, yeah, I told Dr. Hendricks, I told Bill, I said, yeah, you know, it looks like he got his master's here. And he was like, oh yeah, he was like our very first master's student. I was like, no way. He's like, yeah. So that's pretty cool. But so California kid, went to Texas and came back. Where are you from originally, David?
I'm from San Jose. San Jose is where I grew up. And born in Portland, but didn't live there long. Grew up in San Jose. That's where I spent most of my childhood.
Nice. Very cool. What did your parents do while you were growing out there in San Jose?
Oh man. My dad was a car salesman. He sold cars for like 30 years. Oh, they, wow. My mom and dad are both from New York. My dad's from Brooklyn. My mom's from Queens. They escaped New York in like the 69 and came out to California. And my dad sold cars for 30 something years and he's a classic salesman, a little bit of a Willie Loman, from Death of a Salesman is good old Joe.
Right on. What about your mom? What did your mom do while you're growing up?
She did a few things here and there, in and out of different positions, but not really anything, any full time, that I can remember. She was, kind of an interesting childhood. So,
gotcha. What about brothers and sisters? Do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah. So my sister is the smart one. She ended up, getting a PhD and, from UCLA in Chicano studies. She is a professor at UC Riverside. She's an author and a professor and pretty influential in the field of Chicano studies.
Wow.
My brother is, he's kind of in tech, sort of like securities and tech and kind of an auditor of sorts. So he's up here in the Bay Area kind of doing some contract work here and there.
Okay. Very cool. Well, let's give your sister a plug. You know, she's an author.
Tara Yasso.
What's her name?
Her name is Tara Yasso.
Okay, very cool. My wife is studies a number of different areas and is real into diversity and inclusion and studies some things like that. So I'll drop the name with her and I'm sure she's heard of her. Sure. So growing up, were you a sports kid? I mean, gravitating towards recreation, parks, and tourism. Did you get into sports? What were you into?
Yeah, so soccer was my life growing up as a kid, I didn't really have much of a backup plan. Soccer was it,
and that was the boom years. That was just when soccer was really getting going, I guess, here in the States, huh?
Yeah, for the most part, you know, I didn't, I was a pretty hyper kid and soccer was kind of my savior.
Right.
But I actually got into Cal Poly to play soccer. So that's how I got into Cal Poly, and I was recruited out of high school and was very fortunate and lucky to get recruited kind of came from a broken home. And so we didn't have any money, and I had financial aid, kind of helped me get into college. And to believe it or not, they selected my major for me. So that's how I found.
Oh, that's back in those days, huh?
Back in those days when it wasn't extremely impacted, and my grades weren't very good, and I was good at soccer, and could get me in on financial aid, and that's how I truly found the recreation world, and there's a long story after that, but
right. Well, I love that story, David. I mean, you just said not very good in academics and got in through sports, and then you end up becoming our first master's degree recipient and a CEO, founder of your own company. So I love that. That's a great Thank story. You. Now, did you play soccer 4 years here?
I did. I redshirted my first year. I had some challenges my first year at school. Mm-hmm. I really got some. I struggled in school. I mean, my whole life. And I was kind of, didn't realize it until I got to college that I had a learning disability, and I was just kind of struggling. Thankfully, my professor, Carolyn Shank at the time.
Yeah,
an advisor really just kind of pulled me up by my bootstraps and said, you need to look into this because you're not keeping up with even the simplest things. And so she pulled me aside and I actually took a break my second quarter and went to Cuesta for a semester. Because I was just really doing poorly and even just a simple rec 101 classes.
Right.
I had a learning disability. I kind of found myself and kind of understood how I learned, and I learned a lot differently than most. And ended up kind of crawling myself back and got back into Cal Poly after a semester at Cuesta. Got myself back on the soccer team sophomore year and then played the rest of my career there.
Wow. What a great story, David. I mean, picking yourself up and I think it's so important. And unfortunately, I don't think even in this day and age, maybe what's happening now will help us to realize that, each and every person has different experiences and have different ways of learning. And, I think for too long, professors took this mindset that students were out to deceive them, or students were out to try to get one over on them and that sort of thing. And so students who weren't doing well were coming from this place of like not really caring. And I kind of feel like most of the time that's not the case, And yeah. So one of the things I know that I learned from Carolyn Shank, and I didn't get to work with her for very long. She actually retired the year before I came in. She was here sparingly, but one of the things I did learn from her is that, wow, really created a family environment and one where, you could trust that the professor cared about you. And we've tried to bring that through. And so I love hearing that story. We awarded her with a Lifetime Achievement Award a couple years ago, she deserves like 3 Lifetime Achievement Awards.
Absolutely. Amazing, amazing lady. I still communicate with her on Facebook and so forth. But, she really, without a doubt, changed my life and really helped me, helped me find myself and how I learn. I see it as a huge benefit in what I do professionally. And, yeah. Now I'm dealing with my son and his same issues that I had when I was a kid just kind of coaching him through the fact that, it's all right. It's normal. It's actually a huge benefit, and it makes us who we are. And, you know, and so, you know, he's 8, but almost 9. And, you know, but
I've got a 9-year-old too, and I'm right there with you, man.
Yeah.
My wife and I this morning were like trying to figure out, like, all right, how do we go about rechanneling this energy into, you know,
not a doubt.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so when you think about your time here in San Luis Obispo, obviously you went to Texas. We're going to talk about that here in a minute, and came back for graduate school. So I imagine San Luis Obispo and the area became pretty special to you. Is there an enduring memory from that time?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, without a doubt, San Luis Obispo is just an amazing place. You know, experiencing some of the you know, the places like McCarthy's, when McCarthy's used to be in the old spot that it was. And I remember them actually picking the bar, taking the physical bar out of McCarthy's and walking it down the street to their new location.
You were one of the ones helping?
What's that?
You were one of the ones helping carry it?
No, not really. I mean, necessarily helping, but, you know, just kind of seeing it happen.
Right. That's awesome.
Know, obviously the Firestone Grill and you know, just all the places that are pretty epic. And just, you know, getting out of class and running over to the beach and, you know, taking the dog to the beach, just that whole lifestyle is just amazing. Everybody obviously wants to stay in San Luis Obispo, and the lucky ones can, and very few are able to do so. So just a pretty epic place. And we always, you know, always love to go back. And I actually work with a pretty large landscape architecture firm, RRM Design in San Luis Obispo.
Oh yeah, do you really? Yeah, I love RRM. We have a number of friends who work with them. Do you know Bianca Koenig?
No, GP? I just usually deal with the principals.
Yeah, gotcha.
Like Leaf.
Very cool. Very cool. So let's talk about that graduation. So you graduated from Cal Poly, right? And then what? So assistant coaching, that's what took you out to Texas?
Yeah. So, you know, again, soccer was kind of my life. After graduating with my bachelor's degree, I trying to figure out what the heck I'm going to do now. And I found a opportunity as a graduate assistant for Midwestern State University, and became their assistant coach for their varsity team, a head coach for their junior varsity team, and then coached a whole lot of youth soccer out in Texas. And so it was a good experience, you know, getting paid to try to get your master's degree and coaching, and, you know, spent 8 hours a day on a soccer field. And Texas is an interesting place. I'll leave some details out, but ended up back at Cal Poly after a year, you know, kind of California kid that just really needed to get back to the coast. So,
right. Yeah. So I see that when you came back, you ended up working in Napomo in recreation there, served as a executive director for 5 years. Was that kind of after the soccer coaching and after you got your master's, was that sort of your foray into the parks and recreation world, professional world?
Yeah, without a doubt. So, you know, I graduated with my master's at Cal Poly. My first gig, my first job right out of the gate was an executive director for Napomo Area Recreation. Very interesting in the sense that they are a nonprofit that operates a recreation department, mm-hmm. and is just, you know, Napomo being just an arm of the county of San Luis Obispo. So learned a whole lot right out of the gate with, you know, nonprofit world and operating a volunteer board of directors. And we ran a after school program and a preschool program and a, you know, basketball league, and you know, it got pretty political. I was very advantageous to try to get them into a new facility. They had a kind of an older building that was going to be purchased and so forth, and we were trying to move them into the park. And so kind of put a big plan together to have them move, and working with developers to build a big community center. And, you know, it got a little political, and kind of bailed out of there after 5 years. And it was a great experience. And I think they're still struggling to figure out what they're going to do in Napomo with the fact that they are just an arm of the county. So they kind of get the shaft a little bit in funding and so forth. So I believe they're still operating as a nonprofit in their recreation department.
Right. I got you. So I would imagine, and if you can speak to this, I think it's important for students and young professionals to hear. I feel like the nonprofit world has more parallels to entrepreneurship and owning your own business than maybe really the corporate world or those other worlds do. Because public recreation would, for example, municipal recreation, because when you're a nonprofit, you're essentially wearing lots of hats. I imagine with Napomo, you had to wear lots of hats, and everything from maintenance to marketing, right?
Without a doubt. Yeah. Maintenance to marketing, to fundraising, to, you know, HR, to, you know, programming. Yeah. You know, it really kind of ran the gamut. And, definitely a tough world to be in that nonprofit space. But, kind of definitely opens up your eyes to a little more creative thinking, and there's some structure, but, you know, at the end of the day, you have a volunteer board of directors, and, it's kind of a constant battle of where the money's coming from, and making sure that you're servicing, you know, as many people as possible, and bringing in as much revenue as possible to keep the lights on, and to do everything from operating a business. Definitely a good experience. Happy to be doing what I'm doing now.
Right. So where I was leading with that is you ended up becoming an entrepreneur, right? And so I was wondering whether that experience maybe kind of informed you and helped you to maybe realize, yeah, hey, I can do this. Now, obviously, I know in looking at your path, it wasn't a direct path, right, from Napomo to entrepreneur. But let's talk a little bit before we get there to that entrepreneur area. Let's talk to me a little bit about the playground equipment area, right? So you ended up getting into playgrounds and getting into playground equipment. And, you and I talked last week a little bit about this. We take students to CPRS. We've been taking students to the California Park and Recreation Society annual conference for many, many years. I mean, we had 60 students at our height taking them to CPRS. It almost always falls in exam week now, and so we haven't gotten as many students going recently. But they're always their eyes just open up when they walk onto that trade show floor and they see all of these different playgrounds and all of the different vendors and whatnot. And so I think, you know, you and I talked about it. I think a lot of our students don't even realize that that's one area under our umbrella. So can you talk about that experience for you and how you got into that area?
Yeah. So after Napomo situation, I ended up working for the city of Santa Maria, actually for a short period of time, kind of started from the bottom again. After being executive director, I started back at the coordinator level, I found that I just needed more. I just felt like I wasn't being, I wasn't satisfied with what I was doing. And so I just continually looked for something else, and just stumbled across playgrounds. I myself, even after bachelor's degree, master's degree, trying to figure out what the recreation field really was, didn't know the playgrounds existed as an industry, and I kind of stumbled across it on a Craigslist ad or something like that, and And someone was looking to hire a sales rep for the playground industry. I actually ended up moving to Seattle to start playground sales for a company up there, try to open up a market in the Seattle area. And I did about 6 months up there, and then I had an opportunity to open up a sales territory here in the Bay Area. So I moved back down here to the Belmont area, and I've actually been here ever since. So that was 2007, I think. So yeah, it's a very interesting industry. It has evolved tremendously even since the time I've started. It will continually evolve. And it's the commercial side of recreation is a whole slew of people that are in this field, and the different companies that are trying to sell their products. I work primarily with landscape architects, and so that's another big piece. Cal Poly has a tremendous landscape architect field and department, and so I meet people daily that are Cal Poly alum from the landscape architecture world. But yeah, so I worked for an agency for about 10 years, and there was just like many other industries, consolidations happen, and kind of the big corporate monsters kind of come in and buy things up, and the playground industry has kind of consolidated in many ways. And so there's really just two big corporate entities that own just about every manufacturer in the world,
right?
At least in the United States and some internationally. So I, after 10 years with this other company that I'm working for, I was able to split off and start my own company. And so, it's been great. It's been about 3 years here, independently as my own company, Specified Play Equipment. And really I named my company after what I love doing and who I work with, which are landscape architects. And landscape architects really specify play equipment. That's part of their role, is to specify not just play equipment, but benches and different types of things in a park. So it could be pavers. It could be the type of plants that you're going to be putting in this park. So
right.
Yeah, so I was able to start my own business and partner with manufacturers that are independent, so that are not a part of this kind of big corporate scene in the playground industry. So they are still independent manufacturers that are family run, and so I have products from the United States, a company called Burke. I represent a product from Berlin, Germany, called Berliner, a product from Finland called Lapset, and then a site furnishings line from the Czech Republic called MM Site. So we're very, very diverse in the product offerings that we have and that we represent. And that's really, the key, I think, in this industry is to be diverse, to have multiple sectors that you can work with. I work with cities, schools, landscape architects, and then that kind of branches off into whether you're working with a private school, public school, also the private sector is also developers and stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say developers. Yeah,
and yes, a few once in a while, some residential work, which is very rare. But I have a job right now that's, believe it or not, just a massive, massive residential project. But we typically don't. We typically work in the public sector.
Right. Right. Well, I just want to say, David, I love what you're doing. And, from back with Natural Play Decks and looking at your mission there, it's obvious that you want to you know, I don't want to get too into the corporate versus small business thing, but it's pretty obvious from hearing you speak and from looking at your stuff that you care about sustainability, you care about that small business and that family environment, you care about imagination with kids, and obviously I think all Cal Poly people will appreciate your motto with specified, and that is learn by playing. I wonder where you could have ever gotten the idea from that, you know?
Yeah, right?
I love that. I love it. What a great one, man. So, you know, it's kind of funny. I don't know if you know this or not, but I led the authorship of Cal Poly's Learn by Doing book. We published that in 2017. And I couldn't believe that no one had ever written a book on Learn by Doing as much as we talk about it, right?
Right.
And, the president gave us money to write the book, and then he sent me around on a tour to get buy-in from all kinds of different people, you know, and we were meeting with one of the executives in the administration at one point, and he goes, "Well, you know, do you know whether we've trademarked Learn by Doing or not?" And I looked at him and I was like, "What?" I was like, I just always had assumed they had, right? And I was like, I don't know. No, we haven't really looked into that. And he goes, "Well, can you look into that? And if we haven't, can you do that for me?"
Yeah.
What? It's amazing, the type of stuff, you know. So I will tell you, I did look into it, and Learn by Doing is not trademarked by Cal Poly, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And I did not spend the millions that it would have taken to actually get the trademark. But anyway, well,
that's actually a funny story. I owned another company called Jerk and Pickle, and we made and manufactured beef jerky and pickles in the farmers markets. And you know, we got pretty big. We were in a bunch of retail accounts, and we were in the SFO airport, and you know, we were all, you know, natural beef jerky and 10 different varieties of pickles. Nice. And I got to the point of trademarking Jerk and Pickle.
Yeah.
And I went to that process, and you know, the trademark office said that you know, you can't own the word pickle, but we'll give you jerkin. So I do have a trademark for Jerk and Pickle.
Right.
But
right.
But yeah, it was just such an interesting topic. Gotcha. But yeah, learn by playing is, you know, our one of our hashtags that we use. We live by it. You know, other one, you know, our passion for play is our purpose, and so yeah, we're very passionate about what we do. I only bring on people that kind of share our same philosophies. I pretty much hire people that I know, and want to kind of grow with people that I know. And you know, that's where we're at. We just, in fact, hired a Cal Poly student that was my first intern, Ian Parsons, who is now full-time staff after his internship just this month. In fact, he started after his 3-month internship.
Right on. I love Ian. What a great kid. I did not know that. So that's great to hear. And you know, I should insert, I said millions to get a trademark. It wouldn't have cost millions, but it could have, because someone actually owns Learn by Doing. So Cal Poly might have had to pay them millions. I have no idea what happened with that, but there was no way I was going to follow through with that.
No way.
But so, hey, let's talk before we end here. Let's talk a little bit about the experience industry approach that we've adopted here at Cal Poly. You know, we view it as an umbrella to bring in all of the different areas that we service, you know, and that's the way we saw it, because 70% of our students were special events or sport management, and that wasn't in the name recreation, parks, and tourism, right? But what we've really seen, and I think it resonates in what you do, what we've seen and realized is that so many different people that are not, that we wouldn't necessarily think of being in our umbrella, are ultimately trying to create positive experiences for people. And when I read your mission and I see what you do there and what we just talked about, I feel like that would resonate with you. Does it? Is that what you're
absolutely talking about? Yeah, without a doubt. It you know, we are creating experiences within spaces. Yeah. And so, you know, we work with, you know, cities and landscape architects, and we're designing spaces and you know, we're creating, you know, unique environments that are memorable for. And that's it's such a lengthy topic, but you know, cities are continually trying to help identify, create, you know, identification within their communities, and so when it comes to parks and playgrounds, you know, they want to create these memorable spaces that people, you know, that people you know, identify and will remember. You know, there's an economic aspect to that as well. And you know, you create a memorable experience, with a park or a playground in a community, you know, house prices go up, people want to live near that space. You know, local businesses thrive. And so, you know, there's the aspect of creating experiences for various cities and communities. You know, parents want to experience memorable places to take their kids and meet with their friends. And of course, at the end of the day, you know, children seek these experiences, you know, for fun and unique, you know, places to play with their friends and really experience that whole risk and failure and mastery, which is a huge topic of what we do in our world of designing playgrounds. So, you know, It is a catch-all term. I do think that it definitely resonates. I have to say, when I started in recreation administration back in the day, just trying to understand what that even meant and was actually almost part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Right.
you know, kind of growing with the recreation field and what Cal Poly has done with name changes over the years. I think it works well. I think it definitely, you know, everybody is at the end of the day trying to have a good experience of what they do. And our field is definitely right on cue with that and with designing spaces and communities. So yeah, absolutely.
Well, hey, let's end with this, David, if you don't mind. When you think about the future and of the playground equipment industry, let's make it a two-part question. What do you think are the biggest challenges moving forward, and what advice would you have for students who might be interested in this area?
Wow. Well, you know, I think, you know, you have this we have this podcast during one of the most challenging times I think that anybody can remember with the coronavirus pandemic that's happening. So you know, there's, I think that's kind of a blip and an asterisk in that question. If I were to, you know, exclude that, that might be a better way to answer that. But you know, we're always dealing with public money. So for the most part, the you know, the economic factors are gonna drive a lot of things in our industry. Right. Things are, you know, a lot of public money is based off of tax revenues, and so, you know, right now is an interesting and a bit scary time. But the other aspect of that is, typically with public money, there's allocated budgets that, you know, in any kind of economic downturn, which we experienced in 2008, and I was in this industry at that time, you know, we actually did fairly well because the budgets were still allocated for, you know, like the 2-year budget cycles. Mm-hmm. So there's certainly budgets may decrease, and you know, competition may increase, but it is a fairly safe industry to consider when it comes to economic factors. I would say, in terms of advice, get out there, be persistent, you know, be diverse, don't be afraid to speak your mind. And I one of the things I always tell my staff, and what really is the bottom line, is just to completely be yourself. Mm-hmm. And in any industry, in any sales position, in anything you do, you know, the more you are yourself, the better you're gonna do. So, it's really simple. At the end of the day, you could sell anything if you're yourself and you believe in it and you're passionate about it. So, you know, stay passionate and make sure you're authentic.
Right. Well, that's just great advice, and I really appreciate you taking the time. Obviously, we are in tough times right now, and just taking the time to stop and pause and talk about what you've done. I know it's a tough time, and I appreciate you taking a few moments for us today. And we'll just end by saying to our listeners out there, be safe and be healthy. Thanks so much, David. Have a great one.
Thank you, Brian.
Take care.